Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 136 of the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. Got a packed show for you guys. It is Georgia week. I'll break down the Gamecocks road trip to Athens, Georgia to take on the Bulldogs. I'll talk about the storylines, key matchups to watch, keys to the game, give my prediction, and much, much more. Also, have a fantastic interview with former Gamecocks catcher Robert Berry as we talk about his path to South Carolina, winning the 2010 and 2011 national championships, playing for head coach Ray Tanner, life after baseball, and much, much more. Before we do that, this is a podcast sent to you by our friends over at Tanny Hills Group Therapy. Yes, Tanny Hills Group Therapy, the oldest bar in Five Points, owned by legendary USC quarterback Steve Tannehill. They've got great specials for you guys, including Taco Tuesday, Wing Wednesday. They're perfect if you're a local here in Columbia, you want to grab a bite to eat, or if you're in town for a game day, or if you're just searching for a fun night out in the town, Tanny Hills is the way to go. Again, that's Tanny Hills Group Therapy, located down in Five Points. Be sure to check them out and tell them Chris from the Spurs Up Show sent you. All right, I'm Chris Phillips, your host of the Spurs Up Show, as always. Appreciate you guys tuning in. It is Georgia week, and I've got one thing to say to lead off this show. To hell with Georgia.
To hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia, the cesspool of the South.
To hell with the Georgia Bulldogs. Like I said, it is Georgia week. South Carolina take on the Georgia Bulldogs in Athens, Georgia, this Saturday, noon kickoff on ESPN. Really, really excited to be back with you guys. Obviously, it is, you're hearing me in a different slot here. It's Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, whenever you're hearing this. But I am very, very excited to record. It's funny. I had sort of avoid not recording on Sunday afternoon, posting on Monday. It kind of felt weird. Obviously, with the bye week, really wasn't a whole lot going on, really nothing going on over the weekend. So I thought it would be much smarter to consolidate this week's shows, do one big show on Wednesday or just one show on Wednesday previewing the Georgia game. But obviously, starting next week or next week, we'll go back to the normal Monday, Thursday routine. But I missed you guys. I'm not going to lie to you. I really did miss you guys. It's kind of weird. It's like I feel like we haven't recorded an episode in forever, and I'm like, it's only been two more days than normal, but it has felt like an eternity. So it feels good, obviously, to record again, to talk to you guys, to come back. Episode 136 of the Spurs Up Show. Extremely excited to dive into everything that is the Georgia Bulldogs and dive into Georgia week in the Gamecocks with a huge opportunity, obviously, going to Athens. Before getting everything, just one quick housekeeping item you guys probably saw on social media. The Spurs Up Show watch party this Saturday afternoon from Tanny Hills Group Therapy, obviously our great sponsor. Having a watch party at Group Therapy in Five Points. Doors will open at 11:30. Kickoff, obviously, at noon. If you guys are in the Columbia area, you're looking for somewhere fun to watch the game. The first watch party was a blast. Be sure to come out to Group Therapy again. Kickoff's at noon. Doors going to open at 11:30. It's going to be a really, really good time. Food, drinks, former Gamecocks will be there. Really, really excited about this. So, again, if you're in the local Columbia area, I know students are on fall break this weekend. If for some reason you're a student and you are in town, or, again, if you just live around the Columbia area and you want a really fun spot to watch the game on Saturday, Tanny Hills Group Therapy is going to be the spot to be. Obviously, I'm going to be there, going to be watching the game, covering everything. Drinks will be flowing. It'll be a really, really good time. So, again, doors open at 11:30, kickoff at noon, Tanny Hills Group Therapy for the watch party. Also, one other thing, as I always say, if you haven't done so, pause the podcast right now. Go to whatever outlet you're listening to, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever platform you're on. Do me a favor, leave a five-star review. Just leave a review with your feedback, your thoughts. Really do appreciate you guys doing that. Obviously, it helps boost up the show for those who maybe don't know about the Spurs Up Show or maybe you've never heard of us. It obviously helps those guys find us. So, again, if you could do me a favor, pause the podcast, leave your thoughts, feedback, leave a five-star review. If you have thoughts, if you have some things you like, you don't like, you want to voice those opinions or voice how you feel about the show, please be sure to do that. I really, really do appreciate you guys doing that. Thank you so much. All right, let's get into it again. To hell with Georgia. It is Georgia week. Gamecocks taking on the Bulldogs. Noon kick on ESPN in Athens, Georgia at Sanford Stadium. South Carolina in this one. A 24.5-point underdog, over-under set at 52.5. Series history, Georgia leads the overall series 51-18-2, and we don't forget the last time they met, which was last year. that hyped up matchup all off season where the Gamecocks were really supposed to be the team that was going to challenge Georgia for the SEC East crown. Georgia came into Columbia and showed why they're one of the best teams in the country, won that game 41-17. Kind of interesting news on the injury report here. So Will Muschamp and his Tuesday presser coming out saying that Rico Dowdle, Dakarion Joyner, and Randricus Davis are all expected to play Saturday. Rico Dowdle himself said that he was full go in practice. He's coming back from that ankle, obviously. He should be good to go. So really good news for South Carolina on the injury front, which is not something I feel like we've said a ton since Will Muschamp became the head coach. So obviously getting those guys back, especially getting Rico back fully healthy for this game, was something you just had to do. The bye week couldn't have come at a better time. Everybody kind of, you know, licking their wounds, if you will. But Rico Dowdle, those guys, Rico, Dak Joyner, and Randricus Davis, all expected to play Saturday. So very, very good news for South Carolina again on the injury front. Breaking down the Bulldogs just a little bit, obviously their head coach is Kirby Smart. The Bulldogs right now are ranked number 3 in the AP poll. They are 5-0 with wins over Vanderbilt, Murray State, Arkansas State, Notre Dame, and Tennessee. Obviously, most recently, the Bulldogs took down Tennessee. And a game that was really, really interesting, obviously, in Knoxville, that game was really close for about the first 2.5 quarters, and then Georgia ran away with it. They won that game by a score of 43-14, but when you take a look at the game notes here, I'm taking a probably look at the box score instead. When you take a look at that game was actually, if anybody watched it, that game was really close for a while, and closer than much closer than anybody thought it would be for most of the game. So 26-14 at halftime. At one point, Tennessee was leading the football game. I think it was 14-7, or I know it was 14-10 for sure, but kind of an interesting game, but obviously Georgia pulls away, wins by 29 points, ho-hum type of performance. They obviously feature a great running game, Jake Fromm, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and obviously a fantastic defense under Kirby Smart. So let's talk about some of the biggest storylines heading into this football game. And for me, my first one that I lead off with, South Carolina back on the road, back in business, coming off the bye week, but you're back on the road. To me, this has been a different Gamecocks football team on the road than it has at home. You take a look this year, Charleston Southern, Alabama, Kentucky, Charleston Southern, Alabama, Kentucky. South Carolina's played really well at home, I feel like, really spirited, a lot of energy. You look at the games away from home, North Carolina, which I understand was a neutral site in Charlotte, but still a game away from home, and Missouri. South Carolina has looked much less than impressive, lethargic, hasn't come out with a ton of energy. South Carolina obviously goes back on the road to Sanford Stadium, which, you know, they are lucky it's a noon kickoff. It's not going to be quite as raucous an environment. It's going to be very manageable for Ryan Helinski and that offense and the rest of that team. But how does South Carolina respond going on the road? Obviously, again, you have a bye week. They lick your wounds, get ready for the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, you need all the time you can get when you're facing a team like a Georgia who is so loaded on both sides of the ball. But I'm just really curious to see how this South Carolina football team, how do they perform in a road game in a hostile environment? Because, again, you've looked so bad on the road to this point. And Georgia, you know, I'm not going to say by far because obviously you played Alabama, but they're going to be right there with Bama in regards to best teams you've played this season. You were able to, for a little bit, I guess you can say, hold your own against Alabama. And again, you lost that game by 24 points. But you saw some flashes, some things you could be encouraged by. And South Carolina thought played with a lot of energy. They took a lot of risks in that football game. Do they keep that same mentality and that same mindset? And does this team come out ready to play in a big road game? Because, again, I don't think that's something that we have seen from this team yet in 2019. How do they respond going into a hostile environment, one of the more hostile environments in the SEC? It'll be really interesting, I think, to keep an eye on that. My second big storyline, the line of scrimmage. I know that's really generic, that's really bland, but this is going to be a line of scrimmage football game. As much as any football game South Carolina plays on this 2019 schedule, Georgia's identity is they want to run the football. They've got a great running back in DeAndre Swift. They got other guys behind him that can carry the rock as well. Georgia's always loaded that position. But this is a perfect example and a classic example of the team that can run the football and the team that can stop the run wins football games. And you look at even the game last year. We knew, I feel like every year South Carolina plays Georgia, that is the key. Their identity is still running the football. I mean, Jake Fromm has only thrown 8 touchdowns this season. He's not had to throw the ball a bunch. He has not thrown any interceptions. 77% completion percentage. Jake Fromm, not a guy who's had to really put the ball in harm's way. This is going to be a line of scrimmage game once again. South Carolina has been really good up on the defensive front. Javon Kinlaw, Aaron Sterling, DJ Wonnum. We all know about their numbers, especially the sack numbers, but they've been really good in the run game as well. South Carolina obviously averaging 6.1 yards per carry on the ground as a team, which is really, really good. I think any South Carolina fan would have taken that. Obviously, Rico Dowdle has been a different player this year. Tavian Feaster's been a nice addition. The Gamecocks coming off that huge rushing game against Kentucky. But Georgia's a different animal. So, again, to me, it's all going to be about the line of scrimmage in this game. Can South Carolina win at the point of attack? Can they even hold their own at the point of attack offensively and defensively? That's really going to determine this football game, in my opinion. My next big storyline, Ryan Helinski gets another shot. And you're probably asking yourself, what do you mean by that? Well, the last time we saw Ryan Helinski on the road, it was not good. This entire South Carolina team was not good, but he was not good either. At Missouri, again, I know there were some things going around. His health, you know, injury status. I think his arm was probably sore in that one. He did not look like himself. And really every other game that Ryan Helinski's played has looked much, much, much better and looked more like himself, like I said. But I'll be intrigued just to see Ryan Helinski, again, getting another chance to go into a hostile road environment, play his best football. How does he perform on the big stage? Because, again, it's one thing to, you know, play Alabama at home. It's one thing to play at Mizzou. It's one thing to play at night at Williams-Brice, but going on the road to Georgia, a big-time environment. I know a place that he visited while he was in high school. He's probably very familiar with it, but I'll be interested to see the play of Ryan Helinski because, again, I don't think this is a game where you can go out and you can ask Ryan Helinski to throw the ball 35, 40, 50 times like you did against Alabama and expect to have any shot in this football game, but Ryan Helinski's going to have to play well. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. He's going to have to play well to give South Carolina a chance in this game. I think South Carolina's probably going to have to take some deep shots, try to hit some shots. You know, you think with those big-time wide receivers you've got with Brian Edwards and Shai Smith, guys like Ortre, Josh Van, somebody's going to step up and make a play in the passing game. But Ryan Helinski is going to have to do a really, really good job of taking care of the football, not necessarily being a game manager, but kind of what he did against Kentucky, taking care of the football, not putting it in harm's way, and you have to hope that the running game can pick up the slack otherwise. Because, you know, again, if the Ryan Helinski we saw at Mizzou comes out against Georgia, this game will be over by halftime. I mean, there's just no question in my mind. So I'll be interested to see, you know, how Ryan Helinski reacts to, again, going on the road. It'll be a big-time atmosphere, a big-time opportunity for him. How does Ryan Helinski in his second opportunity in a road start, how does he perform? Another big storyline in this one, obviously you always have to talk about when these two guys face off, but Will Muschamp against Kirby Smart. I think that's obviously something kind of a smaller storyline, if you will, but those two guys obviously coming up in the coaching ranks together. You know, it's funny, I talked about this before, but in the spring, Will Muschamp told me there's nothing like getting your ass kicked by your best friends, and he was definitely talking about Kirby Smart when he said that. So, you know, it's kind of a weird dynamic because South kind of went after both these guys. Obviously, they got Will Muschamp, not Kirby Smart. Two defensive-minded guys, two guys that I think honestly do have similar philosophies. I think just what you're seeing with Kirby Smart is he just has much better players. I don't think they're that much different of coaches, to be honest with you. Like, and I'm not knocking Kirby in any way. I don't think their philosophies are all that different. But anytime those two guys square off, two defensive-minded guys, you know, it's got a chance to be a very interesting game. So I'll be interested to see kind of what the game plans are from both those head coaches. Another big storyline for me personally, and I think this is one that Gamecock fans will agree with. This, in my opinion, is the beginning of a very, very, very crucial stretch for this football team. Very crucial stretch. You know, you come in this game right now, you're 2-3 overall in the season, coming off a bye week. Georgia's 5-0, but for your football team, you're 2-3. And no, but listen, nobody's expecting South Carolina to win this football game on Saturday. I don't think there's anyone reasonable going in this game expecting South Carolina to get the win. We obviously see the spread, 24.5. It's a big spread. We get it. It would be a massive, massive upset. But I talked about in the preseason, I thought this three-game stretch upcoming with Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee, I think that's the biggest three-game stretch of this entire 2019 season. Now, I will reiterate and tell you why. Because this South Carolina football program, listen, you beat Kentucky, which you had to do. I talked about before the season, you had to beat Kentucky. But where is this program in regards to the SEC East pecking order? You already lost to Missouri. So that's an X on your mark. That's not a good thing, obviously. But I talked about in the preseason, where is this South Carolina program in regards to the SEC East pecking order? And I think this three-game stretch is really going to tell you where South Carolina sits right now because, you again, Georgia, Florida at home, at Tennessee. Obviously, the Gamecocks are going to be underdogs in two of those three games. We're already in one. They're going to be an underdog to Florida, and they probably will be a slight favorite at Tennessee. Probably a touchdown favorite. But I don't know. I just think, to me, this three-game stretch is going to tell you a lot of where South Carolina currently sits as a program in regards to that SEC East pecking order. Again, I know it's kind of a – maybe it's an unfair thing to say right now because you do have a true freshman quarterback and there are different circumstances. But I think it's a big-time stretch. And obviously, this stretch upcoming is going to be big if you're going to even sniff making a bowl game. You know, South Carolina, say what you want. Obviously, the spread is huge, but the Gamecocks get another – huge opportunity on Saturday to take down one of the best in the country, to go toe-to-toe one of the best in the country, and really measure themselves as a program. See if they've gotten any better since week three. See how this team has improved going into week seven of the season. So to me, again, I think it's a very crucial stretch upcoming, and it starts with South Carolina going out on Saturday and putting together a solid performance against the Georgia Bulldogs. Another big storyline, the health of Rico Dowdle. You know, I talked about, listen, they said he's healthy. What does that really mean? We don't know. We've heard guys are healthy before. Rico Dowdle, he has to be healthy for Saturday. It would be a huge, huge blow to not have one of your two backs ready to go against the Georgia Bulldogs team that you need to run the football against. And, you know, here's the thing. They can say he's healthy, but we've seen Rico Dowdle healthy, quote-unquote, but not 100%. And it's a different player. And that's the one thing I think going this game that worries me just a little bit is that I think one of the reasons Rico has been so good this year is because he has been 100%. He has been fully healthy. Now coming off that ankle, can he do everything he was doing before? Is he going to change up his running style? You hope not because, again, he was having such a great year, and it's going to be extremely unfortunate if that's the case. But I think the health of Rico Dowdle is a huge storyline in this one, and it's something that South Carolina fans need to keep a really, really, really close eye on as that game gets going on Saturday. My final storyline in this one, I already kind of touched on a little bit, but you get another big opportunity here. I mean, the Gamecocks, you knew coming in this season, you had three opportunities to go up against three of the best teams in the country. And right now in the AP poll, Alabama is one, Clemson is two, and Georgia is three. You know, you'll have one more opportunity after this, obviously, but how does South Carolina respond? Because, you know, I think a lot of people were very optimistic after the Alabama game. And, you know, you guys saw what I said. I was less than thrilled, and I think some people took offense to that. But at what point are we going to see this Gamecocks football team sort of break out and take someone to the brink that maybe they're not supposed to? Listen, I'm not saying again South Carolina should win this football game or that it should even be a touchdown game, but can South Carolina really make this a fourth quarter game? Can they make Georgia sweat and get this game into the fourth quarter and make it a competitive football game deep in the game? Again, all you can do as a team and as a program is ask for these type of opportunities, for these chances to go against the best in the country and measure yourself against the best. How does South Carolina – what do they do with this opportunity? How do they make the most of the opportunity? They go out and lay an egg and get blown out? Or do we see a South Carolina team that comes out aggressive, inspired, ready to play off the bye week, fresh, ready to go, and gives Georgia all it can handle for four quarters? You have that opportunity? Now it's up to the guys on the field to do it. So I think it'll be really, really interesting to see how South Carolina handles the opportunity on Saturday. All right, let's get into some key matchups to watch here. My first key matchup to watch is going to start in the line of scrimmage, and that's going to be a huge theme here, talking about key matchups. The first one is going to be defensive lineman Javon Kinlaw against left guard Solomon Kindley. Javon Kinlaw, a name you just cannot go without talking about. Javon has been absolutely phenomenal this year, rushing the passer, stopping the run. I think he's fully solidified himself right now as a first-round NFL draft pick. But Solomon Kindley, a guy, when you take a look at the stat sheet, really just the measurables, when you take a look at him, I'm looking right here, 6'4", 335. And this Georgia offensive line is big across the board. I mean, these dudes are big as hell. They're big across the boards. I mean, you could have picked really any offensive lineman for this matchup, but – really, Javon Kinlaw against Kindley, being on the inside, he's going to need to be a run stopper. He's going to need to get in Jake Fromm's face whenever they pass the football. Georgia, again, loves to run the football. They're going to try to give it to DeAndre Swift, and I think wear down the South kind of defense. Can Javon Kinlaw be that disruptor? Again, not just in the running game, but in the passing game as well, because Jake Fromm has been phenomenal this year. I expect them to mix it up, do some play action, throw it around a little bit. Can Javon Kinlaw be the leader on that defensive front. Because, you know, it's kind of funny. I talked in the preseason, I thought the reason Javon Kinlaw would be so much better is because he would have all this help around him. You know, he's going to have all this help, other guys. But I think the defensive line has been better because Javon Kinlaw has taken his game to another level. I mean, I'm not saying the other guys aren't playing better around him. Don't get me wrong. But Javon Kinlaw, to me, has been the leader of this unit. There is no question in my mind. This unit would not – I don't know if a guy like Aaron Sterling, for example, is having the type of year he's having if Javon Kinlaw isn't going beast mode the way he is. I don't know. So, again, Javon Kinlaw against Solomon Kinley, I think that's a huge matchup in this football game, stopping the run, being a disruptor in the passing game. Javon Kinlaw really going to need to have one of his best games that he's had thus far this season. On the other side of the line of scrimmage, another key matchup to watch here. But on the other side of the line of scrimmage, offensive lineman Sedarius Hutcherson for the Gamecocks against defensive tackle Tyler Clark. Tyler Clark, a guy, if you've been following this Georgia football program at all, I feel like if you've watched Georgia at all over the last 5 years, it feels like this dude has been here. 6'4", 300, a dominant presence on the front for Georgia. He's a run stopper. He's got 2.5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks thus far this season. A guy that is in his own right a disruptor, a guy who I fully expect, again, to be a first- or second-round draft pick. Sedarius Hutcherson, one of your best offensive linemen on the interior. I think the Gamecocks – I talked about the mentality and the identity, if you will, after the Kentucky game and how I want to see South Carolina stick to that. Well, to stick to that, you're going to have great blocking up front. It starts with guys like Donnell Stanley, like Sedarius Hutcherson, like Jalen Nichols, these other guys up front. I mean, it's really going to come down to that. So, Eric Douglas, you've got to be able to win the line of scrimmage. Sedarius Hutcherson, a guy, is one of your leaders. Again, Tyler Clark, they have other guys up on the defensive front too, but Tyler Clark is the first name that you're going to see that is going to be a guy that's going to be in the backfield or could be in the backfield a lot. Gamecocks need to do everything they can to limit him. And again, because you're going to have success in the run game to make this a competitive football game. There's just no way South Carolina can go into Athens and not run the football with success and this game be even a 21-point game in the third quarter. I don't see it. You're going to have success running the football. And, again, it starts with your guys up front like a Sedarius Hutcherson. So, again, Sedarius Hutcherson against Tyler Clark, my second big key matchup to watch in Saturday's game. My final key matchup involves coaches. Offensive coordinator Brian McClendon against head coach Kirby Smart and co-defensive coordinator Glenn Schumann. Obviously, Kirby, a former defensive coordinator in his own right, knows defense in and out just like Will Muschamp does, and obviously Glenn Schumann, his co-defensive coordinator. I think this is a huge matchup. I am really, really interested to see what type of scheme and what type of plan Brian McClendon and this offensive staff get ready for the Georgia Bulldogs. Because like I've talked about, I want to see this team come out and stick to the identity it had against Kentucky. Even if it does not work early on, have an identity. Know who you are. You want to be physical. You want to win at the point of attack, and you want to run the football. Does this team abandon the run early on and, you know, put it all on Ryan Helinski and try to throw it 50 times? Or do they get stingy with the run and stick to the running game and keep, you know, get – because I think, again, even in this game, I would say your backs like Tavian Feaster, Rico Della, those guys need to touch it 12 to 15 times each on Saturday, each. They just have to. They absolutely have to. So what type of game plan does Brian McClendon come up with? Because, again, this is going to be a chess match between these coaching staffs. Kirby Smart and Glenn Schumann, their defense is very good. These are guys that know the defensive game. They're going to have a good game plan ready for South Carolina. I expect them to bring a lot of pressure on Ryan Helinski. Play man-to-man on the outside and try to stop the run. But I think I think Georgia's going to want to make Ryan Helinski make throws under pressure. No questions asked. How does South Carolina combat that? And what do they do in the running game to make sure they are successful? How creative do they get the running game? Do we see some counter plays? Do we see some draws? Do we see some screens? What does Brian McClendon dial up? So, again, I'll be very interested to see that. So, again, my key matchups, defensive lineman Javon Kinlaw against left guard Solomon Kinley, offensive lineman Sedarius Hutcherson against defensive tackle Tyler Clark, and offensive coordinator Brian McClendon against head coach Kirby Smart. Let's get into the keys to the game for this one on Saturday. My three keys to the game that I think South Carolina is going to have to execute to a T to have an opportunity to pull a massive, massive upset on Saturday. My first one is simple, shorten the game. Shorten the game. Some of you may be asking, what do you mean by shorten the game? South Carolina needs to put together long, sustainable drives, even if they don't result in points, have you? They need to put together long, sustainable drives. And, again, that can only happen if you run the football. The more often you can keep Jake Fromm and DeAndre Swift and that offense off the field, the better you're going to do. Because, again, like I said, shorten the game. It's going to make it where you're getting this more into a third quarter, maybe even a fourth quarter type football game. Limit the possessions that Georgia has. You're going to give yourself the best possible opportunity to keep this football game close. And, again, the only way that can happen is if you can run the football. You have to be able to run the football and just move the chains, you know, and have a good offensive game plan. So, to me, shorten the game. Make this a fourth quarter game. Do whatever you got to do to make this a fourth quarter game. My second key to the game, weather the storm. Listen, a lot of people have been saying, hey, it's a noon kickoff at Stanford. It won't be that crazy. I call bullshit. I think it's going to be a raucous environment. Georgia's going to come wanting to beat the living hell out of South Carolina. You know, it's funny. Georgia fans say this is not a rivalry, but Georgia absolutely despises South Carolina. So I think Georgia fans will come out ready. They're going to come out loud. If you're the Gamecocks, if you're Ryan Helinski, it's going to be crazy to start. Weather the storm. You can't win the game in the first quarter, but you can lose it. Do not get panicked. Stay calm. Whatever happens early on, there's probably going to be some stuff happen that doesn't go your way. Stay calm. Stay calm. Do everything you can to just play your game. Take the crowd out of it. An early score would be huge for South Carolina in this football game to take the crowd out. But weather the storm. Just weather the storm in this one and play ball. I mean, really, that's all you can say. Again, it's one of those things where you just don't want to see a South Carolina team come out, one thing not go their way, and all of a sudden we hit the panic button. So weather the storm to me is going to be a big one. And then my final key to the game, honestly, let it all hang out. Hey, man, what do you got to lose? You're a 24.5-point underdog. You're not expected to win. South Carolina, your own fans aren't even really expecting you to win. Let it all hang out. I loved the game plan South Carolina had against Alabama when they really were aggressive. I thought that was the most aggressive type play calling and the most aggressive game plan we've ever seen from Will Muschamp in South Carolina. I'd love to see something similar in this one. Again, I'm not saying go out there and go for every fourth down, throw Hail Marys, and do stuff that's stupid that's going to get you out of the football game. But again, copy what you did against Alabama and take it to this Georgia game, because I love the aggressive mindset. Play like you have nothing to lose, because you don't. You don't have anything to lose. Again, nobody's expecting you to win this football game. You're almost a 4-touchdown underdog in Vegas. Why not? Call up some trick plays. I love doing like a fake field goal, fake punt like you did against Alabama. Just let it all hang out, man. I mean, why not? Again, you have nothing to lose. Be aggressive. Be the team that's wanting to throw that first punch and just kind of see what happens. Let the chips fall where they may. So, again, my key is the game. Shorten the game, weather the storm, and let it all hang out. Now, time for my prediction. My prediction for Saturday's game. You know, coming to this one again, South Carolina, 24.5-point underdog. And whether you believe in Vegas or not, that is a huge spread. I talked about I did the best bet on Tuesday. I think South Carolina plus 24.5. I think 24.5 is just way, 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 way too much. It feels like too much. I'm not saying that South Carolina is some great team right now, because, I don't know anything about this team. I think South Carolina beat a bad Kentucky team. Not trying to take away a bunch from them, but let's call a spade. Kentucky's a bad football team. And I think that's probably what Vegas is seeing as well. But, you know, coming into this game, you know, South Carolina, I talked about, has another huge opportunity, an opportunity to go on the road, to make a good impression, to come out of the bye week sharp, and to maybe give fans some hope and optimism and let the rest of the SEC know that South Carolina is not just going to be an easy game they can overlook the second half of their schedule. Georgia, obviously, with national championship aspirations, South Carolina, they're looking at them as more of a minor road bump, I guess you could say, in their schedule. This South Carolina-Georgia game, this rivalry, it always seems to be a close game, with last year, I thought, really being the outlier. You know, South Carolina, 17-10 ball game at half, but Georgia really was able to run away with that football game. Gamecocks were just outmanned on the defensive front. I don't think we're much going to see that happen again. I think the Gamecocks have got depth up front. I do have Georgia winning this football game. I want to believe South Carolina is going to put up a good fight in this one. I really do. And the reason I say that, I think this is going to be South Carolina's best opportunity against one of the big three, speaking of Bama, Georgia, and Clemson, to make it a fourth quarter game. Because unlike Bama and Clemson, Georgia's not a team that really is known for is going to come out and, you know, throw it around 50 times and has these crazy playmakers on the outside. And, you know, Georgia, you know what they're going to do. They're going to try to run the football. They're going to give it to Swift. Obviously, they're very good in play action. Jake Fromm's a great quarterback. I'm not taking anything away from him, but that game's just not really their MO. So when I talked about key to the game, shortening the game, Georgia's going to do that as well. I mean, if you can stop the run, Georgia's going to do that as well because they're going to run the football. So I think that gives South Carolina the opportunity to make this game closer than probably any of the others they're going to play against those other two big opponents. I think you could probably see it being a 14-point game going to the fourth quarter, but I think Georgia will pull away. I've got the final score, Georgia 38, South Carolina 20. So I've got an 18-point game, which, again, I don't know how South Carolina fans would feel about it. Obviously, it just depends on how the game goes. I think most would probably see it as a decent success if you can see some progress. But I don't know. I just think the style of play with Georgia does give South Carolina the opportunity to keep this one close and make this a fourth quarter game. I'm not saying South Carolina is going to win. You know, I think it could be something where it's 38-13 and South Carolina scores a late garbage touchdown. I'm not saying that's not possible. And Georgia is the much more superior, vastly superior talent wise. Obviously, they're rolling right now, 5-0, number 3 in the country. You can't debate that. But I just, from what I've seen from the Gamecocks defensive line, and if Ryan Helinski can be fully healthy, which he is, as far as we know, he's fully healthy, ready to go. And South Carolina, if they can come out and establish their identity and lean on those two backs, I think South Carolina will have the opportunity again to make this a fourth quarter game. But I've got the Bulldogs winning this one 38-20. Not a close game by any means, an 18-point win for Georgia, but you know, I think maybe this game goes a little differently than some of the quote-unquote experts think. I don't think this is a game where it's 45-0 at halftime by any means. I think South Carolina does give Georgia some fits, not a ton, but some fits throughout this game. And, you know, I think maybe we see some encouraging signs heading into the second half of the season. All right, so that's my prediction, 38-20 Georgia. Let's get into the listener questions. We have one voicemail and then a ton of listener questions, so we're going to go ahead and jump into these.
What's up, man? My name is Zach. I go to USC. Long-time fan of the Gamecocks. I love your show, man. I just want to express my thoughts on the Georgia game this weekend, see if I can sway your opinion a little bit. I know you're going to predict Georgia, but this is what I sent to my friend a few minutes ago. What I said, despite the evidence of the path of Muschamp, I still really believe we have a chance this weekend. If I had to assign a number, 15%. 15, not 50, 15. We're coming off a bye week, which is huge. Georgia hasn't lost yet, so every week further in the season statistically increases their chances to lose, in my opinion. It's an early game, so Georgia players won't be hyped up, and they most likely will be overlooking us. The early game also means less fans and less rowdy. Plus, Muschamp offense after bye weeks is something to note. In 2016, we play UMass after a bye week, 34 points, 400 yards of offense. Season averages were 20 points and 340 yards. 2017, we played Vanderbilt, 34 points, 390 yards. Season averages, 24 and 337. 2018, we played Vanderbilt after what was supposed to be the Marshall game, so I'm counting that as a bye week, 37 points and 530 yards. And then we played Tennessee later in the year, 27 points and 380 yards. And the season averages were 30 and 426. And sure, maybe you can look at that and say we didn't play anyone ranked or good, but there have been plenty of times Muschamp teams haven't played ranked or good opponents and completely shit the bed offensively. So it's a bit irrelevant, honestly, who it was against. In fact, if we were to look back at every game, I'm willing to bet we would consider that we underperformed offensively in over 50% of the games against unranked opponents. So in my opinion, saying the competition is the reason we had success in the games following the bye week is a flawed argument. If I was a neutral fan, I'd say 34-20 Georgia, but I'm a Gamecock, so 31-7 Cock. Thanks, man. Love the show again, man. Thanks for providing you. Keep doing it, man.
All right, Zach. Appreciate the voicemail, man. Really good stuff. That was that was good stuff, man. Very well thought out, researched. I like it. I like all the research. I like all the stats coming off the bye weeks. And listen, I mean, I'll tell you. You obviously heard my prediction, 38-20. I think it's a very, you know, like you said, a neutral fan would say it's 34-20. Obviously, I'm a Gamecock, but for my realistic side of things, I'm keeping it 38-20 Georgia. But I mean, I will tell you this, and I don't know why I feel this way, but you know, I feel worlds better about this game than I did Alabama. I mean, worlds better. And this game's on the road. So, you know, again, I'm trying to keep it realistic right now. I'm trying to keep my wits about me and, you know, realize the competition we're playing. And, again, I'm picking 38-20. It's not like I'm picking South Carolina to win the football game. But I do hear what you're saying. I mean, anytime your team is coming off a bye week and their team, you know, had a game – you know, it's something to keep an eye on. It is something. It's an interesting dynamic, if you will. I think South Carolina has at least got that going for them. I think it will be, you know, listen, there's just certain things South Carolina has to do, and they've got to get creative. They got to be aggressive, similar to how they were against Alabama. But again, the style of play with Georgia, I mean, if South Carolina can get a great game out of their defensive front, Javon Kinlaw, Sterling Wan, if they can get a decent game out of their linebackers, I think they need to sell out against the run defensively. I think that's, if I was Will Muschamp and T-Rob, my defensive game plan is, listen, we know Jake Fromm is great, but we cannot allow Georgia to get 6-7 a pop on the ground. It's just demoralizing when the team you're playing can get 6 or 7 a pop on the ground against you. It really is. I like it. I like all your stats. I like your reasons for optimism, and I think they're valid. I think they're valid reasons for optimism. Again, I got Georgia 38-20, but I don't know why. I don't know what's telling me this, but for whatever reason, I feel 10 times better than I did for the Alabama game. That's all I'm going to say. So, all right, let's get into these other questions here. Grayson_Foster13, what are the chances this weekend? You know, Zach, I kind of like what Zach said. I like about 15%. I'd say 15%. Ben Smitty, 2017, are we good enough to stop Swift and Zeus? We don't have to be good enough to stop them. We have to contain them. We have to at least somewhat contain them. Listen, those guys are really, really good. They're going to get their yards. But the Gamecocks, Javon Kinlaw, again, like I already said, they're going to have to do everything in their power to limit that running game. They're going to have to. So I don't know about good enough to stop them, but to limit them, we'll see. We will see. Clark SP34, stats versus Georgia for Brian, Shy, Ryan, Rico, and Feaster. Sorry for so many. Love your takes. Brian, 4 catches for 79 yards. Shy, 2 catches for 40 yards. I don't know. Ryan Helinski, probably 17 for 24 for 187 yards. Rico and Feaster combined 148 yards rushing. I don't know. Dude, that's really tough to predict stats. So, my bad. But appreciate it, Clark. Bledsoe 1218. Do we cover the spread against Georgia? Yes, I think plus 24.5 is an easy bet. Take South Carolina. Scott W. Lawson, if South Carolina miraculously pulled off the upset, what things would have to happen? Well, in a game like this, if you're going to pull a huge upset, you need to win the turnover battle. You need to get some big-time game-changing turnovers. That's the first thing. Second thing, South Carolina's going to have to win the line of scrimmage. That's a huge thing that's going to have to happen. And a third thing, Ryan Lindsey's going to have to play by far the best game of his career. Because I talk about, you don't want to put it all on Ryan, but if you're going to pull the upset, Ryan Lindsey's going to have to ball out. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. Because teams, it's funny, you look around college football, teams that maybe aren't as good as other teams, if they have really, really, really good quarterback play, that sometimes evens the playing field. So if Ryan Helinski can have the game of his life, changes the whole dynamic on Saturday. Tammers, let's just get out of Athens healthy, maybe a W. Definitely need to get out of there healthy. And this is going to be a physical game, but you need to find a way to get out of Athens healthy, no doubt. More questions here. Nate C04, do you think this will be an offensive or defensive game? I think kind of a mix. You know, I don't think it's going to be a shootout, but I don't think it's going to be a 17-10 type of game either. So I think it'll be kind of a mix. Lil Duck Hunter 711, Carolina's crap, go Dogs. I agree. Jimmy.James.76, F Georgia. Jillian.DeQuattro, beat Georgia for sure. Liam_Shup, destroy Georgia. Shayholt04, surprisingly, Uncle Lou hasn't done his hype and hate for us yet. Yeah, I'm surprised. I haven't seen a lot from Uncle Lou this week. I've been kind of surprised. MacBirch_, you're going to heaven, hopefully. Well, thank you. I believe I am. I'm a Christian, so hopefully I am. Let's see. Fantavius, THWG, which stands for To Hell With Georgia. Damn right, To Hell With Georgia. I think that is going to do it as far as questions are concerned. And, yes, that is going to do it. So, appreciate all the questions, guys. Good stuff as always. Again, I've got Georgia 38-20. Fingers crossed the Gamecocks can pull the upset, but I got Georgia 38-20. All right, got a fantastic interview Switching up, obviously, we're in the middle of football season, but, you know, I love bringing on the baseball guests. Former Gamecocks catcher Robert Berry. Fantastic conversation. You know, it's awesome. I mean, anytime you can talk to these guys that were on those national title teams, it is a blast. I mean, so many cool stories, so many great Ray Tanner stories, and just, I mean, unlimited amount of great memories. I mean, Robert Berry, a guy who was fortunate enough coming out of JUCO, played at South Carolina for 2 years, won two national titles. I mean, what more can you ask for? So, phenomenal interview. Please be sure to stay tuned for that, and it's all brought to you by our friends over at SeatGeek. You guys hear me talking about them a lot. SeatGeek, the best ticket buying app by far, the only ticket buying app I use and the only one I'd recommend. Guys, you're probably hearing this the day of, but the Braves are in the playoffs right now. Fingers crossed they're going to win the NLDS game 5 on Wednesday afternoon. If you are hearing this and you are going to that game, especially if you're going to that game, but any other South Carolina sporting event as well. But I know a lot of the fans that listen to this show, South Carolina fans, are Braves fans. If you're going to any Braves playoff games, download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP. You're going to save $20 off your first purchase. Again, it doesn't just have to be Braves games. Obviously, any South Carolina Gamecocks football game, sporting event, NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, concerts, comedy club events. Obviously, this is a great time for sports in the month of October and moving forward. So if you need tickets to literally anything and everything, it doesn't have to be sports, like I said. They've actually got a great ticket rating system where they'll rate the tickets for you based on the type of deal you're getting. So you know exactly what you're getting before you click that buy button. You know if you're getting a steal. You know if you're getting ripped off. They do all the work for you, and they really give you that peace of mind before you click the buy button. So, again, that's our friends over at SeatGeek. Go down the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP, S-P-U-R-S-U-P, to save $20 off your first purchase. All right, enjoy this interview with former Gamecocks catcher Robert Berry. All right, joining us today on the Spurs Up Show is a man that played for Gamecocks baseball from 2010 to 2011. He's a two-time national champion with the Gamecocks. Over his career, hit .285 career average, 4 home runs, 49 RBIs. He was also the 2011 NCAA Columbia Regional MVP and made the all-tournament team, where he finished with 5 hits, a double, a triple, and a grand slam, including 5 RBIs in 3 games for South Carolina. He currently works for the police department back in his hometown. I'm pleased to welcome to the show former Gamecocks catcher Robert Berry. Robert, appreciate you taking the time, man. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to get on here and reach out to my Carolina family back in South Carolina.
Absolutely. So let's start from the beginning for you, Robert, because like we were talking off air, you're a guy that went the junior college route. Obviously, a lot of guys do that. A highly regarded prospect out of the state of Florida. Talk about just, you know, you went to Pensacola Junior College. Why the JUCO route for you? Was it, you know, what were the offers like for you out of high school, and what made you want to go the JUCO route?
Well, I was a multi-sport athlete in high school, played football, soccer, and baseball, and I didn't, you know, like growing up this day and age, you see a lot of these kids, most of them don't even play, you know, actual little league, and it's all AAU and travel ball and, you know, playing on the week, every weekend during the summer and going to showcases and things like that. Like, but when I was in high school, it was big, but it wasn't as prevalent as now when it comes to recruiting. So like during the summer, I was in, you know, in football mode. I was getting ready for the fall, and we were in the gym under the stadium at, you know, 100 degree heat and humidity in Florida. So you can only guess what that was like, with about, you know, 80 bodies in one place. So I just didn't play a lot of travel ball. So coming out of, you know, playing high school baseball in the spring, you know, you would have some scouts there that were, you know, playing there to, you know, maybe watch a pitcher or something from the other team. Or so, you know, I had some scouts there, but I just didn't play enough travel ball to really have my name out there for the recruiting. I was supposed to go to University of West Florida, and, you know, things work out for a reason. Didn't do very well on the SAT, didn't get into the school, but the coach from the West Florida let Pensacola know, hey, we got this guy, we want to keep him close, maybe give him a couple years, then try to bring him back. Well, I ended up, you know, just doing a one-on-one showcase for the coach there, and they needed a second baseman. They had one scholarship for me, and he liked what he saw, my frame, and he goes, all right, you're in. So left for Pensacola. Didn't do well in the fall. I remember that. Just didn't really get a feel for the whole college life, and didn't do well. Just didn't hit, you know, my best. And came to the spring. Actually started off at Indian River in South Florida, closer towards, I think it's closer towards Hollywood, Florida and stuff. Had a really great start to my college career that first week. Hit a home run. It was like, I think I was like 10 or 12 for 14 or something like that, and was player of the week in Florida when it comes to the RBIs and home runs and stuff like that. So that, and then at that point, I can remember at that point, it was just on the whole year. I think, you know, it was just one of those years. You just have so much luck and everything going your way. And, you know, I felt like you probably could have thrown a BB at me at 80 miles an hour. I could have hit it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you set the single season school record with 16 homers, 76 RBIs, and you hit .426. So I'd say you turned it around pretty well that first year.
Yeah, you know, and being in that kind of a zone for majority of the year, really, I don't really remember just having an off, you know, any kind of slump that year. It's a lot of fun, you know, when you finally focus on one sport and, you know, really can, you know, get the hang of being just a baseball player. It was just a lot of fun, you know. There was a time I was just thinking back, or while I was there, some of my teammates were just, you know, praising and giving me, you know, you're a good baseball player. Tell me you're a good baseball player. I was like, you know what? I look back, I'm thinking, you know, I knew I was a good athlete and I was a good baseball player in high school, but, you know, that's just high school. And then you get to college and you're playing JUCO and against, you know, a lot better talent, and you're still excelling. And it's like, oh, maybe I am a pretty good baseball player. But it was just, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, you're having that kind of success in a year, it's just, it's fun to look back on. And, you know, my goal, I always told myself, I wanted to do everything you can do in baseball. I wanted to hit a grand slam in my career. I wanted to hit for the cycle in my career. I wanted to hit, you know, two or more home runs in my career. I just wanted to do it all, just to have that feeling and be able to talk about it. And I ended up doing most of that year. And then I hit a cycle in my senior year. Or I think I might have hit one in my freshman year in college too. So it's just stuff you just, you know, you want to do within your career. So
no doubt. So I was going to say, you know, obviously you tear up junior college. When did the calls start coming from bigger schools? I mean, obviously South Carolina was in there, but you know, the numbers you put up, obviously I imagine without a doubt the calls started coming from some of the Division I schools, that imagine all around the state of Florida, and South Carolina took notice. I mean, talk about the recruiting process once you're at the junior college level, and, you know, when did South Carolina come into play, and what eventually led you to choose South Carolina and become a Gamecock?
Yeah, well, going back into high school, I actually did a hitting camp, or Ray Tanner's hitting camp. I think my junior year came up for a win during Christmas break. That's when it was. And we hit in the old soccer football facility. I can't remember. The indoor facility right there by the soccer field. That's where it was. And I think Coach Tanner pulled me and a couple other guys. I think Adam Matthews was there. I remember watching him running a 60-yard dash and was just blown away by his speed. I think he pulled a few of us just because, I don't know, they selected us out of the group and wanted to, you know, do a little showcase down at the baseball field. Our Sarge Fry. That was my only time I got to be around Sarge Fry. But out of high school, I wanted to go to South Carolina. I actually was very interested in it. And You know, I have a lot of family history in South Carolina when it comes to the missionaries and on my mom's side of things. And I like South Carolina. But I didn't get any offers from that showcase, and went to, gone to Pensacola and did well. That summer, I got a call to play for the JUCO USA team, which Brock Holt was on. Brock Holt plays with Jackie Bradley with the Red Sox, and we played a few game series against the Chinese Taipei national team, and I think we had a rain delay the first game, and so we ended up finishing the first part of that game the next day. And I think throughout the day I went 5 for 7 with a 3-run bomb with a wooden bat at the old USA Olympic Stadium in Tennessee. So, and I think there was Coach Hemo from Oklahoma State was in the stands, and maybe a couple others. And as I was walking out, my mom was there in Tennessee with me. And as we were walking out to go back to the hotel, he came up to me and was like, "I want you to sign right now." And that was pretty much the start of major schools starting the recruiting process. And then after that, every week, a new coach would call. So, and it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a neat experience that you can use in the business world or, outside of, if you're a coach. And it's neat to go through a recruiting process like that where you're just highly recommended and wanted. And it's like anything else. It's school, but it's also a business too, South Carolina called, and I think it started off with Coach Monty Lee. He called me first from South Carolina, and then like a week later, I think Coach Calvi called me, and Coach Holbrook was on his way, on his way in from North Carolina. So no, he was there, but Coach Calvi called me. He goes, "I know you talked to Coach Lee, but he got the head coaching job at South Carolina. So now I'm calling, and probably Coach Holbrook will be calling you." I was like, "Okay." So was talking to them. Coach Turtle Thomas, who was down at FIU, was highly recruiting me. FAU, most of the East Coast schools, Florida, Florida State. Oral Roberts, then Carl DeCharleston, obviously, with Coach Lee. And, had the opportunities. I took a couple visits, official visits, one to Oklahoma State. Was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Oklahoma State. Came to South Carolina, and that's when they were in the process of building the stadium. During the time I was there, they didn't have any bleachers in it, but the team was taking BP on the field. So I got to get the gist of what it was going to be. I've been to Florida, so I didn't, really take an official there. I did a camp or showcase there, and I was able to see the facilities and all that. And it just, I like Florida. I grew up being a Gator fan, and, I would have liked to play there. I noticed they just didn't have the atmosphere that South Carolina had, and hearing all the stories and stuff like that. and plus, out of high school, I just wanted to go to South Carolina. So I kept it under lock and key for a little bit, and, kept talking to Coach Holbrook and Coach Calvi, and Coach Tanner would call every now and then, and, just kept them on their toes about things. And North Carolina, right before I decided to call, North Carolina called me and wanted me to do an official visit. And I told, and then Coach Holbrook called me and was like, and I told him, I was like, "Hey, I want to go see North Carolina." And that was, they just got done with their 3-year stint of going to the World Series. Mm-hmm. So obviously I was like, I'd like to go. And they wanted me to come up. I think they wanted me to come up and catch. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I told Coach Holmberg, and he goes, oh, you know, if you sign with me this week, you know, we'll give you an extra, you know, $1,000 in your scholarship. And I was like, all right,
I'll sign. That'll do it.
I played a little hardball and, you know, got a little extra money for school, and it worked out. Now, I would say, I think I've, you know, any of the JUCO guys that came in with me made the right choice when they picked the school. So me, Morales, and a couple others. So I think they, you know, we look back and we kept saying when we see each other out and about in Columbia, we're just like, you know, for a while, we're like, wow, our scrubby looking selves won two national titles. You know, it's like Morales said it the best. He goes, you know, we won one, and then we just did it again. It was no fluke. So.
Yeah, I was gonna say, anytime you go 2-for-2 in the national title department, that's a pretty solid career without a doubt. So I wanted to ask Robert. You know, you get on campus obviously fall of 2009. Like you said, South Carolina has broken in Carolina Stadium at the time, or Founders Park as it's known now. There's a lot of buzz around the program, and obviously South Carolina has, you know, even at that point had a really rich baseball tradition. But you know, I know South Carolina. That 2009 season was coming off a really, really tough year in which they went to East Carolina, lost in the regionals. I've talked to some other guys that were on that team and just how tough and heartbreaking that loss was. And going into that 2010 season, I mean, when you got there, was the expectation, you know, set to, I mean, I know with the South Carolina program, it's always to get to Omaha, but I mean, could you sense that that was going to be a special season? I mean, was there anything that told you that type of run that you guys had in 2010 was coming that season?
Well, coming into South Carolina in the fall of 2009, I was coming off of a wrist injury and surgery. I had to reconstruct my wrist from blocking the plate my sophomore year in Pensacola. I played 34 straight games, caught all every game until my wrist exploded. So coming off of that injury, didn't play a lot of fall scrimmages. I think I played maybe a couple weekends towards the latter end of the fall season. You know, I did, the main focus obviously is to get my wrist and my arm and everything back into, you know, working order to win a spot and play in the spring. I got the chance to start on opening day, and it was, you know, super excited for all that. And, you know, it was still getting the feel of playing, you know, playing in front of all these people that just scream and yell and have a good time. And, you know, it's surreal, really. It's so much fun. I was playing left field. My first game was just, you know, you feel like a big leaguer. It's hard not to. You're playing in a big league stadium and you have thousands of people that are screaming and loving you just because you're a Carolina baseball player. So, you know, we didn't start off super, you know, hot, I would say. I think we won the first series, and I think the next series was ECU, and it was a grind or something. Then we ended up dropping two there, I think. And then Clemson, and we dropped that series. So it was like, but, you know, we had a bunch of mature guys. We were mature athletes when it comes to what we were doing on the field. And I'm going to keep it at that, what we were doing on the field. you know, guys like Morales and at the same time, there was a lot of us, we were being played in different positions. I think beginning of the year 2010, I played first base and never played first base in my life. And I think Coach Tanner was the mastermind trying to just fit the puzzle pieces into where they needed to be. And then once it was kind of set and people knew, you know, every day what they were going to do, because for a lot of, especially for like me, like being a, you know, multi-position athlete, I was, you know, I got a little frustrated just because I didn't know where I was, if I was going to play, I didn't know where I was going to play. But so mentally, and if I was going to be in the infield, I have to go through bunt stuff, you know, bunt plays and situations in my head. So I'm in the right place at the right time and, you know, don't harm my team or anything. So once we all kind of got settled in those positions and we all knew what we were going to, you know, what our role in the team was, you know, we got into a groove and just didn't look back. You know, I think we won every single midweek game, which, you know, those are huge when it comes to the RPI numbers and, you know, we grinded it out in the SEC conference and, you know, I wouldn't say we showcased our talent down in Hoover, but we never do. So we never did, but you know, it's all about just, you know, the players. We had such a unique team when it comes to the personality and everyone, but the one personality the team has is we weren't going to quit and we were going to grind even if we didn't score a run to the eighth or ninth inning. And we were going to hold you at bay because we had so much trust in everybody on the field. You know, everyone was doing their job and playing hard on defense. And we knew if our pitchers, Cooper or Roth or whoever was on the mound, if they kept it at bay at the plate, we were going to hold down behind them. And that's all it took. You know, we just wait until the other team took out their ace and let them put some, you know, middle inning guy and let him miss a couple spots and then we'll tattoo him. That's which what we did for 2 years, especially in 2011.
No doubt. I was going to say, Robert, you know, I think it's interesting when you talk about the defense, because your first year at Carolina, you made zero errors. Your second year, you only made two to finish with a .993 fielding percentage, which is really, really good. I mean, two errors in 2 years is phenomenal. And South Carolina, like you mentioned, was always good defensively. And I think that's kind of interesting for a team that, you know, I mean, let's face it, Ray Tanner's philosophy, you know, bloop and a blast right back in this thing. I mean, he loved to hit home runs. Yeah. He loved to recruit big power hitters like yourself. So to have that type of power, but a team that plays really, really good defensively too, I feel like is – you know, I don't want to say it's a rarity, but I think sometimes the defense sort of slips when a team feels like it can score 10 runs every game. I mean, was that like a huge focus for Tanner, as even as much, if not more so, than the hitting was?
You know, the old saying is always defense wins championships. And no matter what, you know, even with those old bats, you know, you could still have that 3-2-2-1 game. I think we had a few of those with Cooper when he was on the mound and Sam, and against, you know, some very good talented players that are all in the big leagues now. So yeah, I mean, with those bats, you know, one day you're hitting 15, you know, five bombs in a game and 15 runs on the board, and the next day you could be 3-2, and you know, the saying is true. Defense, you know, wins championships. Obviously, in 2011, if we didn't have the defense we did, we wouldn't be, you know, considered ourselves back-to-back champs. We had some definitely certain situations there that, you know, without defense, we'd be walking off the field with our heads down. But, you know, 2011, you know, 2000, going back 2010, with those bats, you know, we expected it was pretty easy to hit out of the ballparks. And then the transition happened in 2011, which I wish we can go back in time and use the bat that the kids use today and the baseballs that use today, because I know my numbers and everyone's numbers on that team would be so much better just because we were in such that transitional stage and trying to figure out, you know, how to win ball games with these lead pipe that they make us hit with these days. And it was definitely a different kind of baseball in college. And I know a lot of people were upset just because the home run numbers went down and you really had to, you know, you really had to get into the ball with, cause we used the old balls with the aluminum bats. And now these kids use these like semi major league, minor league style baseballs with the newer bats, which, you know, balanced out the issue they had with, the ones we used beforehand. You know, it was like using a pipe, hitting a rag. It's like we went back in time a little bit with it. But, you can't make excuses. It's frustrating because you would really feel like you just got into one and it would like barely skate over or go off the wall. You're like, what the heck, man? especially that fall, we were testing out different bats. Like, who are we going to go with? You know, Easton was like, oh, Noah Nark. And we were using some of their Kinect bats and we'd hit it. I mean, you would crush a ball and wouldn't go nowhere. And we're like, what the hell? So they got Rawlings was sending their bat in, DeMarini. We were trying them all out, trying to figure out what we can do to be successful. And, it was frustrating. It was super frustrating that fall. You're like, God, this season's going to suck. And, you want to hit, with aluminum bats, heck yeah, you want to hit the ball. You're strong. You're in your prime. You're there to go to school, work out, and play baseball. And, you're as strong as you can be when it comes to that being at that age. You have all the tools in the trade. And now that then they give a turnaround and give us, these lead pipes to hit with. And it was interesting. It was fun, but it was interesting. And then the season comes along and at that time, people are still trying to figure it out. The balls that you could, hit off the end of the bat weren't going out and they weren't doubles anymore. So you just had to play ball and keep on winning ball games no matter what. That's what good teams, will do. We had some injuries and I think I told a reporter that year, like, if we want to consider ourselves a good team, it doesn't matter who we put on the field. We got to win ball games. That's what good teams do. Mm-hmm. And, at one point we had a freshman out in the outfield. We had a pitcher out in the outfield, when Jackie and Evan were out. And it's just – and you had to win ball games. Neff comes in for a month, hits 5 bombs more than most of us did the whole year. And, on his wedding night, I told his dad, I was like, the only reason why we won the second title is because Neff hit those 5 bombs, and most of them were within tough situations in series with Arkansas, and it kept us, alive in our season to get the advantage of playing at home for a regional.
Yeah, I was going to say, Robert, I think I remember, I don't know if it was 2011 or 12, but it was one of those years you're talking about the bats. I think it was Texas that made it to Omaha, and I think they hit like 7 home runs the entire year as a team. They had like a 1-2 ERA or something. It was crazy. So, the bat change was nuts. But, kind of going back, 2010 team that won the College World Series, and I know you said you jumped, you came in as a catcher, but you bounced around, obviously. I mean, Tanner wanting to get the 9 best bats in the lineup. You played everywhere, but talk about a guy. I know Kyle Enders was a guy that's sort of an unsung hero and a guy that doesn't get talked about a bunch from that 2010 team, but someone I'm sure that you probably had, a decent relationship with him playing the catcher position that entire 2010 season. And I know you played catcher, obviously, most of the 2011 season, started a bunch, basically every game. But what was your relationship like with him, and how did he help you sort of adjust to the speed of SEC baseball, especially at the catcher position?
One thing, Kyle was – his story is unique. He was there the entire – I think he was there with Carolina his entire 4 or 5 years. I think he gray-shirted, red-shirted 1 year. And, really his senior year, I give kudos to Coach Tanner to sticking behind Enders and giving him the opportunity because, obviously Justin Dallas was there in 2009 and, he was a big leaguer or – but I got drafted high up in 6th round as a catcher. So giving Enders the opportunity to, play and show, showcase his talent. he's a mature guy. He's like a Jay Brown, Jay Brown was like, I hope he's not listening, but he's like the grandfather of the team. He was the dad of the team. He's just a guy you can count on. That's the thing, accountability and a team sport is huge. When nobody's looking and you're doing the right thing, you're doing it for the team, not just for yourself. And Enders was one of those kind of guy like Jay Brown was, and you know, you can just count on him. He wasn't gonna hit 500, and he wasn't gonna hit 20 bombs. Now he could, he had the power, but it wasn't expected out of him. But what was expected was him to block the plate, catch the ball, and throw people out at second and third. And you know, Enders pretty sure had a pretty good percentage when it comes to throwdown. So you know, that's just how he was. And I think all the catchers, Brady, I don't know who else was there. I think it was, you know, Enders, Brady, Richard Royal, and sometimes me. but, you know, in that position, I always tell kids that want to be catcher, you know, being a catcher is a personality position. You know, you can have, you know, you got to have some grit to you, and you got to be tough. You can't be, you know, you kind of got to be the bulldog on the field, because you got to protect your teammates if someone decides to charge them out and stuff like that. And you know, you got to block the plate if someone's trying to get home plate. You know, there's going to be contact. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get bruised, but you just got to shake it off and keep playing, because, you know, everybody on the field is watching you the entire game. So anytime you do something stupid, everybody sees it. So even your own players. So it's just one of those things. When I finally got the opportunity to, you know, get behind the plate, you know, I felt at home. You know, I knew, you know, I was going to play any position I could just to be on the field. But my favorite position was catcher. I felt more at home, because I'm pretty sure when I started full time catching, I think my numbers went up a little bit. I was a little more relaxed, and I was in my you know, element, kind of a thing.
No doubt. I was going to ask, you know, as far as your numbers were really good your first year, Tim, hit 276 that first year, 289 that second year. Was there a welcome to the SEC type of moment for you? Because like you said, I know you get in the big ballpark. I mean, you know, Founders Park, I mean, these huge crowds, and then you start facing these electric arms on Friday nights in the SEC. I mean, was there sort of a welcome to the SEC moment for you where you were like, this is a different animal? Or would you say you adjusted pretty seamlessly and it wasn't too much of an adjustment?
I think, you know, I did pretty well in the adjustment. You know, you take the outside distraction, I would say distractions, and, you know, the field and all the hype and all that, you know, as an athlete, you kind of just, you hone that in, and you trust the skills and the time that you spent on the field for the years that you've been playing this sport. You trust all that, and you play baseball. You know, in the end, it's still a baseball game. And I, you know, one thing about our team was we didn't care who you put on the mound. If it was Sonny Gray, if it was, I can't remember that guy from Auburn, lefty had a hook. Can't remember them, but you know, it was like guy like Matt Barnes, you know, anyone that these guys were highly recruited. They were, you know, fixing them signed for millions of dollars, within the next year, and there was a lot of hype on that. I think our team, especially in 2011, but you know, our team loved that stuff. All right, go ahead. Like Garrett Cole, I mean, they spent years now. They got Trevor Bauer and all those guys. They're all in the big leagues, you know, making a ton of money doing the same thing they were doing back then. And you know, we liked that stuff. We're like, go ahead, put your money babies on the mound and see what happens. Because hey, 95 mile an hour flat fastball is good as anything else. So, you know, if you're seeing it, it's coming in like a beach ball at about 60 miles an hour. So we loved it. We loved to prove to people that we might not be the tallest and prettiest looking team on the field, and we might not have all those flashy home run numbers, but we'll hit it back right. Or, you know, we'll hit it right back at your throat if we have to. So, but with the SEC, you know, I think maybe with Sonny Gray, you know, he's a guy, he's kind of built like I was, 5'10", stocky, but threw the crap out of the ball. I think I had one moment. I got the bunt sign, and Sonny kept throwing me a slider that I swear was breaking about, 12 feet. And I just couldn't do it. I'd show a bunt, he'd throw a slider. Show a bunt, he'd throw a slider. And I think I ended up striking out. And I was like, oh, well, welcome to the SEC. I think that was probably my SEC moment. So, but overall, I think I was 5 for 3 off that guy. So I'll take that to the grave. But, yeah, he definitely gave me my SEC moment, I think.
For sure. So, you talked about, I thought it was interesting, Robert, you talked about kind of the atmosphere at Founders Park and, I don't think there's any atmosphere that tops South Carolina Clemson. I mean, the best rivalry in college baseball. And then you guys, obviously you lost that series in 2010, but we're fortunate enough to play them again in Omaha, get the 2 wins over them. And then you play them again in 2011. I believe you guys won that series, but just talk about your experience in the South Carolina Clemson rivalry. Again, it's regarded by most, I would say, as the best rivalry in college baseball. I mean, very, very heated, both teams with rich traditions, and it's always a very intense series. I mean, talk about your experience in that rivalry.
It's hard to explain. Like, you can see the passion in the fans, the things that they, the money they spend and the things they do to be at these games, and then you get into a team or a school that's in your state, obviously you're gonna, and I didn't, it was hard, a little bit different for me because I didn't grow up, going to South Carolina baseball games or football games and the Clemson, and didn't really understand it. But I think when we, I'm trying to think where we played the first game, I think it was at home maybe in 2010. Mm-hmm. Then we went to, yeah. And just seeing the stadium packed to the T, it's a different beast for sure. It's hard. If you've been there, you feel it. But if you ever played there, it's like, it's a different beast. It's a lot of fun, and it is, and it does get heated. I think social media was starting to really pop around with Twitter and all that. And, people started using it as a platform to, stir the pot, which, it's all part of it. I wasn't real big into all the social media except maybe Facebook. So I didn't really stay up to date with things and what people says and pitchers says. And it's just, you just go out there and they're just another team. Mm. A talented team at that. So I think 2010 was rough, but overall it doesn't matter what happens in the beginning of the season, whoever's last. And we ended up winning that series throughout the year, five out of three. So I'll take that. Mm-hmm. I think second year was, I don't even remember what it was. Did we win the second series?
I think so. Yeah. I think, I want to say that was the, either that year or 12 was the heated bat thing with Jackie.
No, that was our year. I remember that.
Yeah. That the heated, because we had Christian on the show back in the spring, and we obviously talked about the heated bat thing because that was a huge issue. I know Tanner and those guys, you guys took serious exception to that, which you should have, because it was an absurd claim.
Oh yeah,
Leggett, but
you got someone like Leggett, he's very intense. The guy ran with the base, he's an older guy, ran with the baseball team, did more pull-ups and push-ups than the entire baseball team. And he's just one of those, probably outside the sport, he's probably a really interesting guy. I've never really spoke to him other than shaking his hand after the game. He had his, he had his intense moments, and it was a cold series. I remember that, early in the season, it was cold, and mm-hmm. We all, I think it says it on it, on the bat itself, optimum performance is at 70 degrees and above. So, we took science to the game. We're like, all right, well, they got these heaters, but we can do them, use it dual purpose. So we put the heater close to the bat, the bat box, not in the box or around the bat box, where some of us that were not playing would stand by the heater to stay warm so we don't pull hamstrings or any kind of muscles. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, yeah, it was, we were there to help us out because these bats were, like I said, they were lead pipes. And now, I mean, you add the cold, now the ball ain't going nowhere. And I guess, I don't know if it was Kaboom or Keboom or however you've said his name. I think he picked up one of our bats and noticed it was warm and blah, 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 and wanted to cry to Coach Leggett. And so that started the old alpha war there after the game. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, they're just mad they didn't think of it first. So, I mean, and it wasn't cheating because it wasn't in the rule book. So, Coach Tanner was for sure that, you know, it's Coach Tanner, you know, coached with class and respect for the game. And, you know, he wasn't going to do anything outside, outside the rules. And he made sure that it was checked for. So, you know, it's all about winning ball games too.
For sure.
Like you gotta
Mad they didn't think of it first. So we'll stick.
That's right.
For sure. So let's jump down that 2010 season into the College World Series. Robert, you guys beat Coastal Carolina in two games to get to Omaha. You lose that first game against Oklahoma, but then rattle off what was, I think, five in a row. You're in that game two against UCLA. You guys are up 1-0. I mean, a great, just classic baseball game. You're on the bases, actually. You scored the game-tying run in that one, and then obviously – you know, Whit Merrifield with the hit heard around South Carolina forever, you know, comes up and has that clutch hit to right field to score the game-winning run. Just talk about, you know, that run in the College World Series as a whole, because, again, it's funny, you know, I've talked with a couple different guys that have said, you know, after you guys lost that first game to Oklahoma, it was like kind of like you never know. I mean, it's just, I don't know if anybody could have seen that run that came afterwards, you guys winning again. What was it, six straight games to win the College World Series? And then, you know, I know you, again, you know, being on base, scoring the game tying run in that one, I'm sure had to be a really, really cool feeling. Again, in a game that was just crazy. I mean, Matt Price was untouchable that day. Just a crazy run in 2010. But just talk about that run and that game two against UCLA. You see that ball jump off of Whit Merrifield's bat. I mean, talk about the rush of emotions that went through you once you saw that happen.
Yeah, well, when we got to Omaha, you know, it's a blessing just being in that baseball town and getting to play in the stadium that you've watched for years on television, you know, in the years prior. And it's a neat experience to be one of those kids. And but, you know, with that first game we dropped with Oklahoma, you know, the 6-hour rain delay, and you kind of make a joke of it, but it just takes a toll on you. And not making any excuses, we could have won that ball game, but it just didn't work out. So, you know, we all kind of looked at each other in the locker room, was like, all right, well, we're either going to do this or we're not. So, we came all this way and we've worked all this time. We might as well give it our best shot, kind of a thing. You know, baseball is a unique sport, and like any other sport, you got to show up and you got to play. And if you do, I mean, you know, you show up and you play defense and you do what you're supposed to do and, you know, cut down on mental mistakes, you're most likely going to win the ball game. And I can't remember who we played next. Who did we play after Oklahoma?
Arizona State. You guys smashed them.
Oh, yeah.
And they were the number one overall seed, and you guys smashed them.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember now, it's been a while since I watched a little YouTube video of all that, and some of the stuff I forgot I was even part of. But yeah, you know, that year in 2010, Carolina was doing pretty well in all sports. Basketball beat Kentucky, number one. Football beat Alabama, number one. It was a fun year. And then we get to play Arizona State, who's ranked number one, known for their power and, you know, having a good ball team. It's just, you know, it was one of those, I think Morales talked about it, you know, he was upset about his AB at the Oklahoma game the night before and talked to himself and told other teammates that I ain't going to let y'all down again. Mm. And he didn't. You know, he went in there and hit a three-run home run or something. And I think that just boosted, you know, it really, it brought us out of the trench. You know, we were tired from the night before and with a rain delay and the 3-2 loss. And, you know, seeing a couple balls fly out of the ballpark in Omaha and all the crowds going crazy and the girls in the stand that have I Love Cox on their stomachs and they have never been to South Carolina probably. It's pretty funny. So, you know, it's one of those atmospheres that we always felt like the home team. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that's just both years we were there, that I was there. You know, you can always tell when Carolina scored a ball game or scored a run was a stadium erupted. And I know we had a lot of South Carolina people there, but I know they weren't all South Carolina people. So we definitely felt like the hometown team there both years. But yeah, beating Arizona State was 11-4 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Really gave us some confidence that shit, we could do this. We can win this thing. And, you know, we ended up grinding out and doing it.
How amazed were you at what Michael Roth did against Clemson? Because obviously that was something that – I mean, that's a story that lives on forever, and that was like the beginning of Michael Roth. And before that, he was like a lefty specialist reliever, if you will. And, you know, that game single-handedly turned him into a frontline ace in the 2011 year. I mean, how shocked were you at what transpired that night?
I guess you could say – we expected, you know, most of us, all of us expected at least 4, 5, 6 good innings out of Roth. We didn't expect the 9. And, you know, with those old bats, what he did, yes, it was pretty unreal. With teams, you know, being in Omaha, you're facing the best of the best now. And he went out there and, you know, by always some people tell you, you know, how'd y'all win? Well, the stars lined up, I guess. But we played hard. And Roth is a guy that even when he wasn't playing, he kept everyone in the dugout loose and laughing and having a good time. And that was one thing we were known for. We could be down 2 runs in the 8th inning and we're still, you know, joking around, yelling and screaming at the other team and having a good time. And then we turn around, pop 4 runs on you and we beat you 4-2. You know, that's just how we were. And, you know, but when Roth was on the mound, he was a different animal. No matter what, he was a different animal. And I remember catching him, you know, he can be as goofy as all get out, but when he's the starting pitcher and on the mound, he wanted the game at his pace. You know, he would tell me right away, get the ball back to me fast. Okay. So I'd catch it, throw back as fast as I could, because he wanted the game at his pace. And he wanted to control the atmosphere. And that's how he was, you know. He went out there against, you know, thank God it was Clemson. And he went out there, and Clemson had some talented hitters. And he went out there and just shut them down with them old bats. It just, you couldn't ask for any other, you know, anything else. He did what he was supposed to do, and he showcased his talent up there. And the accolades and the things he got the following year and that year and the following year was well-deserved.
For sure. So, like I said, moving to that UCLA game, that final game, you know, Whit Merrifield gets the walk-off hit. You know, just kind of to come where you, you know, came from in high school wanting to play for South Carolina, going the JUCO route. What was the rush of emotions like for you when you jump into the dog pile, realize you guys are national champions?
You know, the 2010 and the UCLA, I think, you know, I did some pinch hitting and some pinch running, you know. Yeah, everybody wants to be out on the field, wants to be the star player. But you, at that point in the season, and you're in that atmosphere, you're going to do whatever it is for the team to win a ball game. And if that's minimal to nothing or being a cheerleader in the dugout, then that's what you're there for to do. And you're there to soak it all in no matter what. You know, Coach Tanner gave me the shot to get up there and pinch hit a couple times in certain, you know, in late in the game and basically get on base, make something happen. And so, you know, I took pride in that. And luckily I was able to get a base hit and get on base. And I think Witt was behind me. And I got the steal sign a couple times. I think I stole once, had the base stolen, but Witt ended up foul tipping, so I had to go back. And I think I'm pretty sure I stole a couple pitches later. So now I was in scoring position, and I can't remember who came up. I don't know if Witt walked or bunted and got me to third or something. No, it was Jackie. Jackie came in. I'm not sure what happened, what Witt did after that, but Jackie came in, hit the tying run, which I scored. And then, you know, towards the end of the game, we had the opportunity. Wingo was on base. You know, what was it, 2-2, I think? Mm-hmm. 2-2 game.
1-1.
And yeah. 1-1, that's right. 1-1. Wingo was on base. We grinded it out and getting there. I think Jeff Jones had a big old big AB at that time. Drew a walk, and, you know, Witt got up there and, you know, waited for that low outside pitch. You know, he had the count in his favor, and he told, you know, I know going back, he told himself, if it's close, put the bat on the ball and hit it where it's pitched. And he did, and that was it. And yeah, it's definitely a rush of emotions. You're out there, we're got shaved heads because we all shaved their heads. We got our hats and glasses upside down. And, you know, I think we pulled our socks down towards our ankles, and it was, we did anything and everything to have a good time and rally and win that ball game. And, yeah, it's definitely a flood of excitement. And I think we hugged Jackie, or no, we hugged Wingo when he scored, but we had to go chase Witt down because he was out by second base. And hook his leg for him to go down because he didn't want to go down to be on the bottom of the pile. So I think I used the takedown technique and hooked his leg, made him go down, and then the pile was on. And I've been at the bottom of those piles. They're heavy. They get heavy. You want about 5 seconds of that before you're screaming, get off, get off, get off, because it gets heavy quick.
No doubt. So, Robert, moving into that 2011 season, I know you talked about Adrian Morales a bunch. We talked to him and kind of the different mindset going into 2011, where it was, you know, 2010 was, you know, fun to do and it was a heck of a run, but 2011, it was really expected, and that team came in with sort of a different mentality, different attitude. You were a guy that sort of benefited, or, you know, that 2011 season for you, like you mentioned, you got a lot more opportunity, started a bunch, played in 65 games that year. Your at-bats more than doubled that season. And your numbers reflected that. You know, you hit .289 on the year, 3 homers, 35 RBIs. But I want to jump to later in that 2011 season, because I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you were the NCAA Columbia Regional MVP and made the all-tournament team. You had 5 hits, a double, triple, grand slam, 5 ribbies in the grand slam. Coming in, I believe it was a 2-1 ball game for the Gamecocks. Just talk about that 2011 season, and then going into that postseason, you know, again, like I mentioned, you had that grand slam against Stetson. You know, what, besides being, you mentioned being on the field more and just being more comfortable, I mean, was it something else that clicked for you? And then going into the postseason, you know, was there any doubt in your mind that this team was going to make another run and probably win the College World Series again?
You know, I would say, you know, the cliche thing, yeah, we're no doubt in my mind we should be in the College World Series, but you still got to show up and play. You know, prior to that, we had a pretty good last month. Like I said, you know, Neff came in and really helped us out and saved our butts in a couple games with some clutch home runs. And I think Brady started, and he had that foot fracture and just couldn't squat anymore. But, you know, Brady was a tough kid. And that's what we, you know, we had a team full of tough players. And he was saying, you know, I can run and I can hit, but I can't squat anymore. So knowing that I was behind the plate and I was the guy, you know, I loved being that everyday guy. You know, I think I was catching a lot more on Saturdays just to give Brady his legs a rest, which was fine. You know, play in the outfield, go catch. You know, you don't see that a lot in college or anywhere. And being trusted by coach to do that, I loved every bit of it. I loved to be able to just showcase all that. And, you know, knowing that, hey, you're the everyday, you're the man. Yeah. You know, it puts the responsibility where I wanted it to be. And, I felt at home when I finally got to that position. And my numbers, you know, I felt more comfortable. I wasn't worried about, you know, every AB. You know, you feel like, you know, every AB, if you're not playing every day, you got to go 4 for 4 just so you can play the next game. So you're not worried about that anymore. You're in the element and you're in the zone and you're there to win ball games. And, you know, I guess I just saw the – I felt like I, you know, back my freshman year in college, you know, I just was seeing the ball very well. And he just getting, you know, I've read a couple psychiatric sports, you know, psychology of sports books and all that. And they call it the white zone. You're just in the white, you know, you're just in this white zone. And everything, no matter how hard it's thrown, it looks like a beach ball coming at you. And you can count the seams while it's spinning. And that's the way it was. And going with Stetson's, you know, 45 minutes from my hometown, that was a pretty neat opportunity. And I got to play against a kid that I grew up playing football and baseball with for years. Mm-hmm. And he was their first baseman. And he ended up hitting, I think, one of his only home runs of the season against us prior to the Grand Slam. Mm-hmm. And when he did that, and we were always, you know, we always competed against each other. Even when we played with each other, we always competed and joked and, you know, poked at each other all the time. So when he hit home plate, I said, "I see you, Trey. I see you." I said, "You wait." And he just laughed. And got the opportunity, got bases loaded. I think there was two outs and their pitcher, you know, had a 2-0 count, you know, Coach Tanner, and during those situations, we're always like, "Bang!" And you always point. I was like, "I know, Coach, I know." And so I was expecting a fastball, and he left it up kind of belt high. Just put a good hit, put a good swing on it, and it was on the sweet spot of those lead bats, and I knew it was gone right away. And I remember running down first base, and I got that, you know, that same, like, that excitement you would get when in a walk-off game, or, you know, that just real energy from my, you know, from the bottom of my feet. And I remember running down first and pointing at the dugout like, "That one was for y'all." And I think Walker told me, like, later in the day or later after that game, he goes, "Bro, when you, I don't know what it was, I was mad at something, but when you hit that grand slam and pointed at the dugout," he goes, I just wanted to, like, throw everything. I want to throw the food everywhere and excite me." He says, "I was so jacked up for you. It wasn't even funny." So, you know, it's just it's the excitement and the love we had for each other. And, you know, to see each other have the success that we did, and the different opportunities throughout the games. You know, it was a little personal too, with playing against a kid that I grew up with, and mm-hmm. playing against a school that didn't even recruit me, and I lived 40 minutes away from him. So, and I think a couple reporters asked the coach if they knew about me. They said, "Yeah, we knew about him. It's just one of those things. It's recruiting." So.
No doubt. So yeah, I mean, I was going to say, obviously you tear it up in the regionals. You guys sweep through the Super Regionals against UConn, get back to Omaha. I mean, obviously that was on the magical run, and what still stands is you know, which I think is really cool that you were a part of it. South Carolina still holds the record for most consecutive NCAA tournament wins with 22, most consecutive wins in the College World Series with 12, which all numbers are crazy. Set the record for consecutive home NCAA tournament wins with 29 that went all the way to 2013. I mean, all numbers I think will never be touched by anybody, which is, again, they're crazy. But sticking to that 2011 year, you know, you guys had some close wins. You know, Texas A&M, you're down 4-0, come back, win 5-4. You guys take care of Virginia that first game. The second game, you go to 13 innings, win 3-2. And then the Florida game comes, which that game one of Florida I don't think will ever be forgotten. And that's one, obviously, I want to spend some time talking to you with, Robert. I think one of the craziest baseball games anyone's ever watched. I'm sure one of the craziest baseball games you've ever played in. But my question – really, this entire interview, my one question to you is, how in the world did you pick that baseball with a catcher's mitt? That is just, like, crazy to me.
Yes, Florida. Because growing up, being a Gator fan, wanting to play baseball and football for Florida. That was a little more – that touched home, because I know I had a lot of family members and a lot of my dad's friends that were just diehard Gator fans. But deep down, they were still rooting for me. It was personal on my level, really. You know, I wanted to go to Florida, and they kind of said, yeah, we want you, but, you know, we're not going to give you a whole lot of money. I was like, all right, well, I got other schools that will pay for my school. So thanks, but no thanks. So this was my opportunity on the personal level to kind of shove it up Florida, if I want, you know, say it nicely, shove it up their butt and say, you should have picked me, but I'm okay with it. That game, the pitcher of, I think, I can't remember his name, Johnson or something like that, a redheaded guy. Mm-hmm. He had some good stuff, and it was like facing Roth up there, maybe with a little more velo, but his stuff moved, and, you know, he was hitting the spots. And it's just, again, it's a grind. You just got to get to you got to hit the missed pitches and put the ball in play and stay in the game at the same time. And, you know, I think Peter Mooney threw a walk, and, you know, Walker had that hand issue, and, you know, he's a tough cat. Yeah, that guy had a pretty swing even with a broken hand. And, he put that bat on the ball, and it snake eyed through the middle of the field, scored the run to tie it up. And you could tell emotionally on that Florida's pitcher, he was getting frustrated, you know, because throughout the year he had a lot of guys behind, you know, on offense for their team, you know, hit home runs and come in big, where it didn't put a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And you could tell he was getting frustrated because he, you know, read his lips. He's dropping F-bombs in the dugout and yelling in his gloves. And so we knew we were getting to him. Just playing the ball game, letting the stars line up and letting the opportunities fly. You know, we had bases loaded, I think, four times throughout that College World Series, a couple times with Virginia, and then two times, I think, in that one game with Florida with no outs. And getting out of all four of those jams is, it's pretty luck. I would say we had skill when it comes to making the plays when the opportunity arises, but there's a lot of luck in all that. And, you know, with Zanino hitting that ball, and luckily he hit it as hard as he did, and Jake coming in from left field, we practiced those, we call them do or dies during practice. You know, I was a part of that when I was in the outfield, so I understood, you know, you come in hard, you field it clean and make a good throw. That's it. That's all you can do. It's do or dies. You either win or you don't. So make a good throw, we get a chance. And he ended up making a good enough throw and was able to put a tag on Bucky Dent's son, Cody Dent, I think his name was. Mm. And, and keep the game alive. That was a moment more so like that ground energy that I got hitting the grand slam. You know, tagging him out like that and spinning towards the Florida dugout and the fans and holding the ball up. That I think I have a picture somewhere of that. And then that was that same energy and excitement. And I'm not a person, even when I, you know, if I scored a touchdown in high school, I didn't do a whole lot of celebration. I just gave the ball to the referee and ran off the field. You know, that's what I was there to do. But a couple of times I felt it. You know, you get that energy from the bottom of your feet and you just want to express it. And that was one of those moments. And you know, then we get the, I think his base is loaded. Mm-hmm. You know, John Taylor's up on the mound, thrown down from the submarine sidearm, hitting the spot, you know, working the count, working the hitters, and using some of their, you know, their aggression at the plate against them. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing is with him, you know, with all the pitchers, you got to hit your spots when the game's on the line. And he was hitting his spot, and then the guy tried to pull a pitch. He probably should have gone the other way, which sent it, you know, semi up the middle. And, you know, Wingo, I've seen him make those kind of plays all year for 2 years straight, and even in practice, you know, the plays he's made, you know, saying it was a surprise that he made it is a lie, because Wingo was one hell of a infielder, making that, you know, diving play, getting up. I always was amazed by his quick snap throws he could do with turning two, or just his quickness in his arm. And he just stood up and flicked it, really. It was short, and yeah, I threw my mask in front of the plate. You know, but you just react, you play ball. You know, I picked balls with my catcher's mitt, just playing catch. You know, you just do it. You let the time you spent catching a baseball throughout your life, and you just allow muscle memory and the things that you know to do take place. And it gave me a pretty decent hop. I wouldn't say it was the easiest pick, but it was a decent hop. It wasn't too long. And, you know, luckily that glove had a good pocket in it from being worked in by all the pitchers, and it went our way, you know. And even at that moment, you know, I was kind of, if you look back on the videos, I kind of took a deep breath after that play and was like, okay. You know, I wasn't that same, you know, jazzed up excitement that I got with Jake Williams' throw, but it was more contained, I would say. I was trying not, you know, I was trying to have that, you know, swag, like, yeah, I knew I can do that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember John Taylor after, because I think you guys got the double play on the next pitch, and John Taylor actually losing his mind, running off the field. What you mentioned, I feel like one of the crazy, I mean, just the pick itself was crazy, but yeah, the mask. I mean, you watch the replay, and it's like if that ball is like an inch to the left, it's the ball hits the mask, they score the run, the game's over. It's just, you know, like you're saying, it's not luck in a sense, but it's like those small things that happen. It's like some things have just got to go your way, and it definitely did. So,
the game of inches, just like anything else. Everything's a game of inches, and if it goes your way, you know, it's just the way it is. There's nothing you can say about it. Like I always say, just the stars lined up.
For sure. So that game two against Florida, though, you guys, a little bit less dramatic, get the 5-2 win. Roth gets the win. Price gets the save. That last out, you know, Jackie catches that baseball, throws it in center field. What was the feeling winning? Because, I mean, that was the last game of your collegiate career. What was the feeling for you personally? Again, you beat the Florida Gators. You stick it to them. You win the second national title. Was it less sweet, more sweet, same feeling? Because I know Morales talked about it. You know, 2010 was a different feeling for both years, because 2010 was you did something you had never done before, and 2011 was more so, you know, you took care of business and did what you felt like you should have done. But I feel like for you, probably, especially beating Florida and being your last collegiate game, it had to hold a pretty special place for you.
Yeah. You know, I think when we played the second game, Roth was up there pitching, you know, coming off like maybe, what, 3.5 days of rest. Price with the same, just got done throwing 95 pitches a few days before. You know, but that, like, you look back and you think about all the things that we all did. You know, I think I found out after the season I had a partial torn rotator cuff throughout the month, the last month of the season, from throwing down to second on a rain delay game or something midweek game. And, you know, these are the things that, you know, teams at that time of the year, you'll have, you know, Walker had his wrist injury. I had my shoulder and people were tired. Your arms are worn out at that time. It's one of those things. When we were playing that second game, we were up 5-3. Mooney hit the only home run for us in that College World Series. You know, I looked at Brady and we were kind of laughing like, bro, we're up 5-2 or something like that. He goes, man, that feels so weird because the last three or four games, they were dogfights. Mm-hmm. And sorry, man, I don't know if you hear my dogs. I hear a siren. But yeah, you know, Brady and I looked at each other. We're like, man, it's kind of a relief. We're up 5-2, and it wasn't that we knew we were going to win the game, because you can't ever think that with a team like Florida. But we were kind of relieved. I told him, like, I'm glad it's 5-2. I'm done with these 2-2 games, 13 innings. He goes, I'm tired. My legs are shot. And he just laughed. And, you know, and Price goes out there and does what he does. And Jackie catches that ball and tosses it into the center field. And I think he turns and looks and kind of says, why did I just do that? But we running in, you know, being on the field this time. Yeah, the excitement. I wouldn't say it's the same, but it's not. You know, it's like it was more like a business trip, like you would say. Like, we won it, we never did it. That excitement's awesome. No, and I can't say that for all of us, because, you know, some of the guys on the 2011 team never won a national title. So to them, they had that same excitement we had in 2010, I'm pretty sure. But 2011, it was exciting. Heck yeah, you're done, you won, you did it. But it was just, like I said, it was like we just proved to everyone that, you know, like Morales said, it wasn't a fluke. You know, we were there and we were going to win this thing no matter what. And, you know, you get excited. I think I threw my mask and helmet down and I grabbed Price, and that we learned from the first dog pile at the Super Regional, don't lay on your back or your stomach because you'll get crushed. So I grabbed him. We hugged each other on the ground and laid on our side so I could take the weight a little bit better and prevent injury. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It's exciting. And you know, the guys that never won the national title, I know they were excited. They'll get out. And, you know, we just proved to the baseball world that, you know, even with the new bats, we were the team to beat.
For sure. So, Robert, looking back at your career now, I feel like it's probably, you know, you're able to look back now and really have perspective on things. I mean, what would you say was your favorite memory in Garnet and Black? I mean, would it be that Florida series or something else? I mean, what was your favorite memory, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the Florida series is definitely up there. Hitting the Grand Slam, you know, obviously hitting the Grand Slam on television, and big stadium in front of all the fans, and getting that rush of energy running out first base, that's a pretty special moment. I mean, I'm trying to think of anything else, you know. You know, having those close games and winning with a couple walk-offs throughout those 2 years. I think Brady had one, Wingo had one, and I think there were, you know, like walk-off home runs. You know, that's what you live for when you play that sport, and that's what you grind in your younger years to get to that point. And, you know, being a part of that kind of stuff and, you know, cheering on your teammates and seeing the success of your teammates, that's what makes those memories a whole lot more fun.
For sure. So, Robert, I'm going to get you out of here, but I got one last question for you, sort of off the wall, sort of fun question, if you will. When you look back, your favorite or maybe your best, funniest, whatever, a Ray Tanner story that sticks out to you, because I know a lot of people have a lot of different experiences with Coach Tanner and obviously a legend in his own right. But what's your best Ray Tanner story?
I'm sure you heard some of them. I think the ECU series in 2010 when he came back and pretty much reamed us all in the dugout when we got back from Eastern Carolina. I'm sure you've heard it from some of the other guys. That was a pretty good one because Bobby Haney was a class act, and he was a great impersonator that made everyone laugh. And I think that was kind of our, you know, our inside joke as teammates and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure Coach Tanner saw some of his impersonations of him reaming us that day. But that was a good one. I think personally, when I first got to South Carolina, they had a kids' night, and they had a bunch of kids watching, you know, a Disney movie on the Jumbotron. And Coach Tanner had this young boy who ended up being Luke, but had this young boy sitting on his lap. And I think I was the next day or a couple of days later, we were at catching bullpens, and Coach Tanner was out there watching the pitchers and all talking to us. And I was like, "Hey, Coach Tanner, was that your grandson?" And he looked at me and goes, "That was my son." I was like, "Oh, my bad." And so between Coach Tanner and I, every now and then I would see him, he'd give me that look like he wanted to say something. And I just look at him and smile, be like, "Hey, Coach, how's your grandson?" And he told me, he goes, "Hey, Barry, how's your butt?" But he, you know, he'd be like, "How's your ass?" I was like, "Oh, it's good." He goes, "Is it flat yet? Because you're going to sit that bench all year." So, personally, that was a joke between Coach Tanner and I. And, you know, he's one of those kind of guys, you know. He can get for gab, and he can – and from that point on, we kind of had that relationship. We kind of just would have one-line punches at each other. And I think even to this day, I see him every now and then at a baseball game or a football game and say hello, and, you know, we – have that relationship just to keep each other in check kind of thing. So I know Luke's all grown up now compared to what he was when I was there.
So. That's awesome. Well, Robert, really do appreciate you taking the time, man. Obviously a lot of good memories to relive from those 2010, 2011 teams. And obviously glad to hear you're doing well currently as well. I know you've, you know, like I said, back in your hometown working in the police department. I know, you know, you had a little celebrity appearance on live. I think what was it, Live PD, when you were in Richland County. So I'm sure everybody saw you. Yeah. I remember everybody seeing you on that as well. It was a big buzz on social media. Got the appearance on Live PD. So I mean, things are going well for you post baseball. So glad to hear it. But always a pleasure, man. Would love to get you back on, talk during the season. Obviously, Carolina baseball's, we all love it, so would love to get you back on, talk some ball, and it's always a pleasure, man. Really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on here.
Perfect. So for Robert Berry, I'm Chris Phillips. Appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of the Spurs Up Show.